Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Monday evening edition of the Yard. I tell you what, man, these football schedules, with all that we got going on sometimes, man, it's tough to cram everything into one day. Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm tired of being hot, too. I'm going to be honest. I am tired of being hot. Guys, it's 6:30. It's 96 degrees. I'm tired of being hot. Go out and shoot pictures today, too, man. It feels like it takes me all day to recover. I'm just getting old. I mean, that's just the reality of life. And for those of you that have to work out in the elements all the time, my hat is off to you. That's a tough gig, man, having to be outside in this stifling heat. And, you know, many high schools have, like, moved their football practices from, like, 6 to 8 in the state of Mississippi for a heat advisory. That's good numbers. Yeah. And so Mississippi State will not have any media availability on Saturday. We will have a chance to speak to Jeff Lebby Sunday evening following the first scrimmage. And so, of course, our number one goal is to get through that event healthy. Then we want to see some spirited competition, see some retention from the spring, see some guys getting up to speed as we begin to kind of fine-tune as we get ready for week one against Louisiana Monroe. But that's your weekend content schedule. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. It's always hot there, and I don't mean the temperature. I mean people trying to get in and out of there to get a great meal. That's true. Yeah, it's true. So I'm sure they've been absolutely hopping as it's been move-in week, and it'll be move-in weekend. The youngest, Ian, will be part of the closing team tonight. So no telling what time they get out of there, because I'm sure it'll be a busy day for Bulldog Burger Company. So if you're in Starkville, moving your student back to campus or to campus for the first time, maybe stop in Bulldog Burger Company. Let them put some meat on the bones, right? Let them nourish you a little bit. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. It'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And if you feel like you're on top of your beauty care regimen game, maybe try those brand new pulled pork nachos. And again, I highly recommend the Smash Burgers. I just don't know how you could go wrong. And again, my next meal from there will be the Triple Smash. I'm going to do it. I'm going to knock it out. And maybe we do that this weekend. We'll see what the bride has planned. But maybe that's what we do. And then you can order that chocolate shake to go. I mean, right before you're finishing your entree, just go ahead and let them know, hey, we're going to get a chocolate shake to go. Maybe you get that Nutella shake to go. And ask about the shake specials, because sometimes they have those for a limited time only. You remember several years ago, we had the banana special in favor of Mississippi State baseball. You know, the Jordan Westberg limited edition shake. You never know what could be available to you. Because we don't just go there for nourishment. We go there for enjoyment. And you can have an adult beverage while you're there. It can be a night out with friends or family. Whatever you choose, you can get it accommodated at Bulldog Burger Company. The place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right, let's talk a little bit about a few things. The first thing I'll say is, again, we absolutely appreciate and commend everybody involved with Mississippi State Communications for giving us so much access this week. I'm one of those kinds of people where it's never enough, right? Now, that doesn't mean I can't keep my mouth shut. I'd love to be able to be there for all of it. Of course, I'd probably need an IV drip to make it through the evening hours. But, yeah, they've been very accommodating for us, and they've brought a variety of players. And as we get towards the end of camp, you know, they'll do their best to kind of get through most of the notables. But once we get into game week, you know, you're probably going to hear from Camario every week, and then whoever the offensive and defensive heroes were from the previous weekend. So, yeah, they're trying not to duplicate, but they've done a good job. They really have. Matt and everybody done a really good job. And I appreciate it so much because, listen, we're your eyes and ears. You guys have interest in this program. That's why you're financially and emotionally invested in it. And so sometimes you just want to know, hey, what's my team look like? You know, and that's kind of where we come in. So today, We got our first look at Jerron Manning and Malik Sealah, as they appear to be in some type of acclimation process. They were not wearing jersey numbers. They were wearing those concussion preventative helmets, and they were limited participants in the day. We did nab some pictures of them just so you can kind of see visual evidence that they're actually here. But again, they're not full go. They're not just like, out there in pads. And again, they don't even have a number or a jersey. They're just out there in just workout gear and a helmet. And so kind of where that stands is basically where it has. Nothing has changed. Like I see some people out there, again, kind of setting themselves up for disappointment. And let me explain what I mean. This may work out, okay? But the fact that they have been in practice today means nothing. It means nothing. Now, I'm a guy that's got a pretty good network of sources. I can assure you of that. I don't have any sources in the 10th District Court of Appeals. That appellate court, I don't have any sources there. Nor does anybody else. Nobody knows how the appellate court's going to rule. And furthermore, there's nothing to know at this point. You say, but Steve, how do you know? Well, it's because it's public record. The Wisney plaintiffs have until midnight Pacific time tonight, or Mountain Time, to file their response to the appeal from the NCAA. Then on Monday, after the NCAA has had the opportunity to review the brief filed by the Wisney plaintiffs, they will then file their final briefs. Once both sets of briefs are in hand of the 10th Circuit Court, which is a three-judge panel, they will then render a decision. It could come at any time. It could come Monday night. It could come next Friday. But it is expected to come at some point next week. Nothing is expected to happen this weekend unless one of the sides decides to pull out of the deal, right? The way the legal process works is, the plaintiffs get a chance to make their case and the defense gets a chance to make their case. And if you're unhappy with that, then you can appeal to the next court, which is what the NCAA has done. Now, as I wrote earlier today, because the NCAA is asking for a stay of the lower court motion, the district court's motion. If that stay is granted, then Malik Sealah and Jerron Manning can't play. And it's interesting to me, I'm no lawyer, and I don't play one on the internet. I do the best I can to kind of figure it out and consult my own attorneys to make sure that I'm informing people of the right things, and sometimes I'm still wrong. It's what happens when you get sports journalists trying to be court TV and vice versa. But, there's some people out there saying, oh, no, that no matter what happens in the federal appellate court, that we're going to be fine here. We're going to be fine. We don't know that. And so it's interesting that so many people are making the argument because they got a positive ruling from Charlotte Sweeney, they think that's enough. And then they're saying that a higher court, even if they reverse that decision, has no impact. Again, I don't know how that works. But I know that the SEC and many other big conferences are waiting to see what the 10th Circuit does. The next part of this too is in the event that the stay is not granted, it's going to take months for the court to rule on the merits. Football season would likely be over. So in many respects, the NCAA basically has one shot here. Now, in the event that the stay is extended, right, if the appeals court says we're going to grant a stay of the lower court's injunction, it could be months, right, before this is resolved on either side. Because the Wisney plaintiffs will have the ability to then file an expedited motion with the United States Supreme Court. So even unless they just ruled that, hey, no, we're not going to overturn the lower court's decision, then this, and of course, granting, you know, Selah and Jerron Manning the opportunity to play, this is something that's probably going to be in the wind for a while. So, again, kind of back to this whole sourcing things, because, again, people are like, oh, this has got to be a good sign. There are no signs. This is just Mississippi State being intelligent and being smart and being aggressive. It's like, hey, we don't want those guys sitting at home ordering DoorDash and watching Netflix and you know, getting out of shape. We want them here getting up to speed. So in the event this thing works out, they're going to be ready to go. Now, again, they're not going to start week one, but they may play week one. Right. And so if they're sitting at home waiting for all of this to play out, again, it may be next Friday. Right. So that's another week that they'd be at home rather than learning the terminology and the playbook. And it's kind of the lexicon, but also, too, just kind of being around the program. So you would waste another week. You know, this ruling came down 2 weeks ago. And so 2 weeks later, we still don't know. Like, we had this motion, and again, I argue that it was a bad motion because it required clarification and now extra hearings, and I understand that's how the legal process works sometimes, but the initial ruling had a lot of holes in it, which is why we're where we are. Again, you grant eligibility to all these hundreds, if not thousands, of players, and then they don't have the ability to return to their team. They don't have the ability to enroll in the portal. It's kind of like, you know, you're out there on a desert island and all of a sudden you find, you know, a pirate's chest full of gold and there's nowhere to spend it. You know, it's the same situation. That's probably a little bit of a forced euphemism, but you kind of understand what I'm saying there. It doesn't value, that there's no value in the fifth year of eligibility if I can't play. Right? And that's kind of where things sit. But again, there's not going to be any leaks out of the Court of Appeals, and these people are duty bound and, you know, sworn to public service. They take their jobs very seriously. And again, even if there was something to know, like as of now, the briefs from the Wisney plaintiffs haven't even been filed with the court, much less the answer from the NCAA. So nobody knows how this appeal is going to go. Everybody is just guessing. So again, don't read anything into the fact that they're here other than the fact that Zach Selman, Jeff Labby, your Mississippi State team's kind of pushing the envelope a little bit just to make sure that these guys will be closer to full go by the time the season starts. It's important to understand that. Also kind of looking around today, DJ Reed is still not back at practice, but I am told it's a high ankle sprain with him and that he is expected to be fine and be full go. When we take the field in week one. And the truth of the matter is, you know, DJ is one of those kinds of guys, too. He's a competitor. He wants to be out there. I mean, he loves football. That's why he's at a place like Mississippi State. He loves football. And so he wants to be out there. But sometimes you got to protect guys from yourself. Putting him out there for another week of practice on an ankle that's less than 100% is only just asking for trouble throughout the season, if not at least the month of September. You got to let the guy heal up a little bit. And so we're being smart and judicious in that respect. You know, we're kind of protecting him because these snaps in fall camp are important, but they're not as important as they are once we tee it up and play for real. So that's something to kind of understand too. But outside of that, so far, we appear to be healthy. We had a couple guys today in yellow, you know, contact jerseys. But, yeah, that's, again, that's just precautionary, you know. And so, again, as we get into this thing, you know, heading into the middle of August, you know, and it's still crazy to think that we're still, you know, you think, oh, my gosh, you know, high school football starts around Mississippi for some schools tonight. And you start thinking about that aspect of it, and you think, okay, well, today's the 14th, Steve, yeah. And so it's the 15th. 22nd, 29th, and then the 5th. So we're still 3 weekends away. Feels like an eternity, man. It does. I'm so ready for sports to be back. And I'm ready for Mississippi State to go on a bit of a revenge tour. had somebody ask me this morning, somebody at another university within the league, Steve, what's your honest opinion? I said, man, we're going to wreck somebody's season. He goes, you think so? I said, yeah. I said, we're going to get somebody that's not expecting us to get them. You know, last year, you know, I think, you know, Florida was struggling a little bit, and I think they overlooked us, and we should have beat them. I think we all know that. Texas came rolling in here with a beat-up running back. We should have beat them. You know, Tennessee, obviously. But I think some teams last year maybe kind of showed up and thought they would go through the motions and just get out of here with a dub. And it was all they could do to get back on the bus without an embarrassing loss. And I think we get over the hump. Like, you go back again to year one, and it's almost like I've just wanted to forget about 2024. And I know many of you are not Blake Shapen fans, and that's okay. That's your right. But when Blake Shapen went down against Florida, any chance if we had of making a bowl game that year was over. And truth of the matter is, when we lost it, football is back, and thank goodness for that. My friends over at Prospects bringing out their best offer to date. New users who sign up will get $150 in lineups. That's if you win your first $5 lineup. It's pretty simple. If you win your first $5 lineup, you get $150 in lineups. And now, Prospects is available nationwide. So what you waiting for? Lock in for kickoff, because everyone and everything is on Prize Picks. So what are you guys excited about this football season? I think the Steelers are going to be better than many people expect. I'm all over that aspect of it. I think that Steelers defense is going to kind of return to form. I think Pittsburgh's going to make a run at this thing in the AFC North. Maybe you see things a little bit differently, but you need to get in the game and get some skin in the game with me on Prize Picks. Now, Prize Picks is going crazy with the deals to start football season. They're just as excited as you and I are. They're giving you this new promo every day during a very stacked September. Make sure to sign up now for guaranteed picks every Sunday, along with profit boosts and daily discounts throughout the entire month. Plus, the app is very simple to use, and it's very user-friendly. You just pick 2 to 6 players and then pick more or less on their projected stats, like pass yards, rush yards, fantasy score. It's the best way to get more locked in on game day. You can make all the picks you want across any sport, all in the very same app. Download the app today and use code BONEYARD to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, run your game. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, if you could wake up tomorrow and just be better at one thing, what would it be? You know? Maybe it's less doom scrolling. Maybe it's more time with your family. Maybe it's making more time for the things that bring enjoyment. You know, I'm a bit of a workaholic, to be quite honest with you. You know, I could schedule some time to do some things away from the office. You know, and I think all of that helps me. I enjoy my work, but sometimes it's just simply good to get away. You know, better is a feeling, and it's really defined by you. And for BetterHelp, it's a BetterHelp therapist who really gets you. It's a focus on global emotional well-being with thousands of therapists and millions of members in over 100 countries. Well, it's progress. You know, and maybe it's getting better at making more time for yourself to do the things that you love. Sign up today and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Toledo. We were already on life support. But we weren't going to upset anybody with Michael Van Buren at quarterback. I mean, all due respect to him. And certainly with that porous defense we had, it just wasn't going to happen. Last year was a completely different team. And again, I argued with some people that I think sometimes that Lebby is a little bit of a victim of his own success last year. Because, you know, if we had gotten blown out by Texas and Tennessee and Florida, nobody would have really been surprised. Florida, maybe a little bit. But that's what makes it such an excruciating look back at the season. It's like, dude, it was right there. We won 5 games, but, you know, 6 and 7 were right there. The fact that they were right there says a lot about the progress we made as a program. Because back in 24, none of those games were right there, with the exception of maybe Texas A&M, Ole Miss, maybe. But, you know, looking around today, again, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where the more times you're out there, the more times you're like, who is number nine, right? Who's this guy? Because the last 2 years, you go out there, and after a couple practices, you got a pretty good handle on who's who and where they're going to be. But all of a sudden, you know, we run a drill, and you see somebody just kind of explode, and you're like, who is that kid? And that's just kind of how it's worked. And so, again, the depth of this team is unlike any other we've had in the Jeff Levy era. We had some good, decent depth in 23 on defense. And again, you know, sometimes you forget these things. Like in 23, you know, Will Rogers missed four games. Woody Marks missed a couple and was hobbled in a couple more, including that game at Arkansas, right? And so I share that just because sometimes, you know, when we lose, and unfortunately we've lost way too much the last 3 years, but we felt like in 23 we'd be a bowl team again, even with all the changes. And then when you don't have a lot of depth offensively, and on top of that, you lose your starting quarterback, it's tough. It is. And injuries are part of the game. You got to be able to overcome it. It's why you build a roster. It's why you have depth. It's why you have NIL money. It's why you use rev share to build a complete roster, not just to build a starting lineup. But the 24 season, dude, it was just so bad. I mean, in every aspect. It's one of the worst seasons of my lifetime. Now, the thing that I go back to, the one quality that I think is somewhat redeeming from 24 is those kids played hard for Mississippi State. They played hard for Jeff Levy. They played hard for each other. They never really quit. You know, you had some games that we may have gotten beaten in, but we didn't lay down. And again, that's just kind of installing the culture for the future. And then if you look at last year, it's like, hey, you know, we may have some games here that don't go our way, but we're not going to be in a situation where we're going to get our skulls drug in. And it really only happened a couple times. You know, Georgia's the one game you look at and say, yeah, that wasn't any good. You know, that A&M game, you forget it was 7-3 at the break. Texas was a one-score game at the break. And so I bring those things up just because of the fact that you can see there is some positive movement in the upwards trajectory of this program. But we have to do it now, right? We can't just say, well, you know what? We played those guys pretty close, so we're getting better. Got to go win games. Like Herm Edwards always said, you play to win. You don't just play it to play it. You play the game to win the game. So while last year, you know, we may have just been happy we didn't get blown out at times, you know, we're not going to accept any more victories. You know, back in 24, you know, poor old Michael Van Buren, you know, true freshman, a guy that's just a few months removed from going to prom, is out there on the road at Georgia and Texas. And we tried to put some packages together to give us a chance to go win a ball game. We just didn't have the horses. And now in year three under Jeff Levy, we got a lot more horses. And do we have enough to go beat the teams in the upper echelon of this league? That kind of remains to be seen. The flip side of that, though, is I don't know how good the league's going to be. You feel like Georgia's going to be great. But outside of that, I mean, who do you look at and say, this team's going to be great? You know, Texas is probably a team you look at and say, hey, with the returning pieces and then the things they brought in from the portal, you know, Texas might take a step forward, and they certainly should. And so they have the potential to be great too. Outside of that, I don't know if there's another team that you look at and say, they're going to be great. And some would say, well, you know, Steve, A&M made the playoffs. Guys, Marcel Reed will give you the football game if you let him. And so that's kind of been the book on him. And they didn't have a good run in the playoffs. But they made it. But I don't think you look at that A&M team and say, this team's going to be great. But Elko, in the 2 years he's been there, has put a good team on the field. So they're going to be good. But when I look at, you know, who we're playing, you know, on our schedule, and I think that's one of the things is, you know, we only can play the teams that are in front of us, right? You know, we don't have to play all 15 other teams in the Southeastern Conference. Only got to play 8 of them. And so, you know, again, just kind of looking back at this, yeah, we're going to show some improvement. We fully expect to. Do you think South Carolina is going to be better than last year? I think they're going to be about the same. That's why a lot of people are saying that's going to be a crazy game. If Shane Beamer loses that game, he may not make it to the next week. And maybe that's true. Then you got Missouri coming here. And listen, those guys whipped our butts last year. And, again, I blame a lot of that on Coleman Hutzler. Missouri didn't even have a quarterback. Right? They had a kid that couldn't throw the football. How are we not just stacking the box? I mean, you know what you got on one side with Kelly Jones? You can't shade his safety to the other side? You know, I mean, it's like they got 11, we got 11. But why are we not stacking the box and making a young quarterback beat us? And you know, when he did throw the football, we picked it off one time. It was a terrible game plan by Coleman Hutzler. It was miserable, man. And yeah, Alabama made the playoffs last year, but I mean, let's be honest about that. I mean, this is not the Alabama that we've known and feared most of our lifetime. Got to go down to Baton Rouge. That's always a dicey game, but at least it's going to be a day game. Maybe that matters. Oklahoma, a team very offensively challenged, of course, last year, especially after Mateer got hurt. We know that defense is going to be legit. But would you say Oklahoma is a great team? I don't know. And then you go to Texas. You have Vanderbilt coming in here. They're going to be great? No. No. Is Auburn going to be great? I don't think so. Is Ole Miss going to be great? I don't think so either. I think they got a chance to be really good. I don't think they're going to be great. And so, again, you look at this 8 SEC game schedule, and you begin to kind of ask yourself, okay, should Mississippi State win their 3 non-conference games? The most difficult one's going to be on the road at Minnesota. But outside of that, you know, do we have a chance to go 3-0 non-conference? Yes, we do. Should it be a 4-game non-conference schedule? Yes, it should. Idiots. I cannot believe people voted for that. Anyway, it's made it hard on the rest of us. But outside of that, you got a 9-game SEC schedule. We did go, but I had to remind myself. And so if I win 3, if I win my 3 non-conference games, I got to get 3 more. I got to get 3 more to get bowl eligible. Can we win at South Carolina? Well, I think we can. I don't know if we will, but I think we can. Can we get Missouri in here, especially if Matt Hardy's not 100%? Well, I think yes, we can. Don't know if we will, but I think we can. Then you got Alabama coming in here. That'll be a raucous atmosphere, and I hate that it's not a day game. Can we get Alabama with their Alabama's quarterback issues? Maybe. It's going to be tough to go to LSU and win. I think we all see that. But, you know, Jeff Lebby's going to be up for the Oklahoma game. That Oklahoma defense is going to be up for Jeff Lebby, too. But that could be an interesting game, too. Oklahoma didn't score a lot of points last year. And going down to Texas, you know, we played them pretty well the last 2 years. It kind of got away from us in 24, but, you know, last year. Yeah, Jeff Lebby shouldn't have to say anything about going to play Texas. But then you got Vanderbilt and Auburn. You know, can you get those two? Can you win an Egg Bowl on the road, maybe? And so I say that because there's a lot of maybes on this schedule. And I'm not going to be happy just to go to Liberty Bowl, but after what we've been through, you know, to have a chance to finish with a winning season for the first time since 2022, I would take that. You want to send us to the Birmingham Bowl? Cool, let's go. Right? We got a great alumni association over there. They'll do a great job putting out the, you know, the brisket and the nachos for us. It'd be great. But, you know, we've got to earn a bowl game this year. We have to. And the schedule is there for us to do it. And it's like we talk so much about how difficult October is going to be. And it is. But again, November could be a month we make some moves, but we got to get out of September. We really need to get out of September 3-1. You get out of September 3-1, Then all of a sudden, everybody in the SEC media starts talking about you, right? And of course, you know, you get through the month of October, and if you're 3-5, nobody's talking about you. You know, that puts you in a situation then where, you know, you pretty much got to win out, right? And you could, you know, again, Vanderbilt opens November for us, and then Auburn does, and then Tennessee Tech. So we get three home games in a row before we go to Oxford. And you just never know how that thing is going to go, you know. You don't. And so you start thinking about that. If you can get out of the gate 3-1, and if you can somehow get to the month of November with four wins, and you can, but if you, that's, to me, that's the math that works for me. Have four wins at Halloween, and you got a chance to get two or three more down the stretch. You know, theoretically, you could get all four of those. I'm not forecasting that. We'll see what the team looks like at that point. But if we're at four wins on Halloween, I feel incredibly optimistic about us making the bowl game. Because, again, one of those is Tennessee Tech. All right, so that should be a win. Can I get one of the last three between Auburn, Vanderbilt at home, and Ole Miss on the road? Can I get one of those three? I think I can. I think I can get one of those. And I might be able to get two of those. And if things go the way I want them to, maybe you get all three of those. But I'm not, again, not forecasting a 4-0 October. It's possible, but you never know which those teams are going to look like by the time we get there. And so as I begin to kind of break down the math and all this, I just feel like the magic number to ensure that we get bowl eligibility this year is going to be four heading into November. Anything above that, you feel really good. Maybe even going to the peninsula, Florida, for a bowl game, right? And so wouldn't that be nice? But, again, I contend to everybody, every time they have me on these shows, I tell people, Mississippi State's going to wreck somebody's season. I don't know who it's going to be, but there's somebody out there that's going to overlook State. State's going to sock them in the mouth. And State's going to pick up a big win, kind of that, you know, kind of a program-defining, you know, SEC win that becomes like a rallying point for you. You know, those are the things that I think about. But I'm more optimistic than most, but I feel very confident that we're going to be able to achieve bowl eligibility. And, you know, again, we got to stay healthy. But when I look around the practice fields, it's just not the same team that we've seen the last 2 years. And that's, you know, that's not me whistling Dixie. I mean, that's just, you know, I'll shoot the pictures for you and I'll show you. It's just not the same team. It's not the same look. It's not the same athleticism. All right, it's time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler, my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. And since we're all friends here, I think you should have his phone number, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Save that number on your phone. You never know when you may need it. You may forget the name. You won't forget the need, so put mortgage guy in your contact. That way you'll have a mortgage professional when you need one. Many people have been turned down before. Perhaps they weren't ready. If you're not ready, Blair can get you on the path to get ready. Right? Other times it may be because you didn't have a seasoned mortgage professional like Blair Chandler. So skip all the guesswork and just go right to Blair. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans with Blair. You could be next. You could be. So whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, the only name to know is Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. The proud sponsor of the top 10 list. If I can get it out. All right. Ralph. Ralph hits me up. And we have a discussion about guitar players. And I'm a guitar player, too. I'm not as good as I'd like to be. And really not interested in playing in front of other people. But yeah, I mean, I enjoy getting out there playing a little bit. And it's really more for my own amusement. But I do appreciate those that can play it exceptionally well, whether they are amateurs or professionals. And the reason I bring that up is as we began to go through this discussion, it's like, okay, well, who do you feel like the most important guitar players of all time? And I thought, you know what? Let's put a list together. Let's put a top 10 list together. This sounds like a great one, right? And there are a couple of people that I'm going to give kind of a tip of the cap to that didn't make my list, but their impact as guitar players, legendary. I'm going to start with Chuck Berry. You know, Chuck was really kind of the master of really amplification. Like before Chuck came along, the guitar was just kind of in the background, right? It wasn't a primary instrument. And it was mainly a lot of rhythm players. You didn't have a lot of lead. I mean, you go back and listen to Johnny B. Goode, and there's Chuck just right out of the gate, like leading the charge with that incredible intro. And so he's the one that I kind of, kind of point to and say, this is the guy that kind of pushed guitar playing to the forefront. And then there's Link Wray from the 50s, and he is the one that kind of changed the sound, really, of rock guitar to make it not just a lead instrument, but to make it maybe kind of take you places you never expected to go. Because back in the beginning, you know, like you think about, you know, Ritchie Valens and those guys, you know, and Buddy Holly, a lot of the it was just strumming. There wasn't a lot of true picking. Things began to evolve. But Link Wray was kind of the father of distortion. He changed a lot by kind of manipulating his own cabinets. But here I go with my top 10. And so we're going to start with a name that I don't know that gets enough respect. It's Michael Schenker. And many of you know Rudy Schenker from the Scorpions. Well, Michael also spent time with the Scorpions, but really got his start with UFO. And that's a band, too, that in many ways in the 70s was overshadowed by Kiss, because UFO just didn't have the same like stage show and presence. They weren't the showmen. But Michael Schenker was considered by many to be like the guitar player's guitarist. He was the guy. He was the riff master. And so we're going to go with Dr. Doctor from UFO at number 10. Incredible. Now, this is a little interesting. This is a controversial pick. And it's not to me. It makes perfect sense to me. But technically, I don't know that Tom Morello could maybe compete with some of the guys higher on this list. But the way that he innovated guitar playing in the 90s was really unlike anything we'd ever seen. And I think a lot of that, too, is because maybe Tom wasn't the great soloist. Maybe he couldn't sit down like a Kirk Hammett. That didn't make our list, but I know many of you would want to give him an honorable mention, so we shall, right? But Tom could make noise with the guitar that we had never heard before. And a lot of that, too, was kind of manipulating pedals and using the kill switch and things like that. There's a lot of things, and as Tom Morello said, like his job was to kind of sound like a DJ on a guitar. So I have him at number 9 because he's one of, in my estimation, one of the key disruptors in guitar playing. And what I mean by that is somebody that just simply went against the grain and did their own thing. To me, he is one of maybe a half dozen guys. I would say this guy was a disruptor. All right, number 8. You knew at some point he would make it. And again, not a great soloist, but a riff master. And some people are kind of critical of AC/DC and Angus Young because it all seems so cookie cutter. What I would suggest is you don't know a lot about guitar playing. Now, is there a formula to songwriting? Absolutely. And Angus has a signature sound, but so much of what he does with that Gibson SG is a lot different than what other people do. And again, it's one of those things, too, that it's kind of based in the blues. And again, one of the reasons a lot of people like AC/DC is it's a lot easier to play along to AC/DC, but you can't replicate the same tone and attitude that Angus Young has. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. So we're going to go with Thunderstruck here at number 8. Number 7, one of my favorites. Now, I love the early Deep Purple stuff. Absolutely love it. I do. Smoke on the Water, all that stuff. Highway Star, I love it. I do. But to me, the best version of Ritchie Blackmore that ever was in Rainbow. That's my feeling. And I think the best Rambo days were with Ronnie James Dio. Of course, there's some good stuff with Joe Lynn Turner and others. You know, Rambo had a lasting impact. But I don't know there's a lot of people that maybe fully appreciate that. You know, since you've been gone, things like that, Long Live Rock and Roll, that stuff is just synonymous with great rock and roll music. And so we're going to go with my favorite Rainbow song. There is like a 9-minute version on YouTube that has, they play it live, and it's so ridiculous. But it's Man on a Silver Mountain. That's your number 7 track today. Number 6, and for Gen Xers, this makes a lot of sense. And one of the reasons why, when you talk about great guitar players, it's like there's a lot of guys in the 80s that technically were incredibly proficient, but they didn't have a lot of feel, right? And there's some guys, as soon as a song comes on, you're like, I know exactly who that is. It's not just the way they hold the pick. It's not just the way they bend the note. There's just their actual presence is in the performance. And that's why Slash is number 6. And we're going to go back to the beginning. One of my favorite GNR songs of all time. Probably my second favorite track off Appetite for Destruction is Night Train, and remind myself. But again, there's just something about the way a guitar sounds in Slash's hands, and the fact that he is so humble. A lot of people think about the guitar solo to November Rain, and a lot of people consider that one of the most perfect solos of all time. And Slash is still out there doing incredible things. Number 5. And many people would say, Steve, this is wrong. He should be higher on the list. Well, I'll explain as we get a little closer. It's Randy Rhoads at number 5. And I know he's many of your favorite guitar players. Even though, like, I think Randy was the better player than Jake. But I think the Jake albums are better than the Randy albums. That's my feeling. You may feel differently. Maybe it's production value. Maybe it's lyrical content. But I thought Jake brought some real grit to things. Randy, of course, really kind of brought neoclassical music into metal. I mean, just the chord structure and the things that he did. Like when we talk about how simple Angus Young stuff is, Randy was like so incredibly technical, but made it sound so simple. And it really inspired a whole new generation of guitar players, and we lost him way too young. So we got to go with Crazy Train, don't we? And that's what we're going to do at number 5. Number 4, and again, I know that this is going to draw a little confusion. And again, one of the guys, you know, Randy's another guy that I would say is a disruptor, right? I would say Eddie Van Halen, maybe the greatest disruptor of all time. Maybe. I think you can make a case for number 1, but no less than number 2. And a lot of that, too, is because Eddie did things on the bridge of a guitar that really nobody had ever done. And he wasn't, you know, one of these guys, too, that just kind of grew up and picked up a guitar because he was angry at the world. He's another guy that had some classical training, and he changed everything about guitar. And so I think we got to go with Eruption. Right, we don't usually use a lot of instrumentals here, but when Eruption came out, all of a sudden we're like, is this real? You know, it was like an alien. That's why it made sense for Edward Van Halen to be featured in Back to the Future. It was nuts, man. And it's so great to have been alive for all the stuff. Number 3. Now, here's the thing. Like, if you've watched the Becoming Led Zeppelin documentary, which, as you guys know, it's not complete. I love it, but it's not complete. This is where, you know, Jimmy was a little more technical than some guys, not necessarily as, you know, neoclassical type thing, but some of the things that he did with guitar were revolutionary. You know, I mean, you go back and you see some of those live performances of A Whole Lot of Love and how the guitar just absolutely jumps out at you, right? And it just laid the perfect bed for Robert Plant to come in and sing over. It was just incredible. So Led Zeppelin, who I think is the greatest rock and roll band of all time, we got Jimmy Page at number 3. Kashmir is your track. And again, one of the things I love about Jimmy is I never knew from one album to the next what kind of weird stuff he was going to come up with. Like, it just works. Like, what is that? What is he doing? Right, he's playing with a bow. What's that? What's that? He picked up that riff on the street in Morocco on a vacation. What? And he heard this guy playing the sitar, and he turned it into an electric guitar. I mean, it's nuts, right? I mean, he's clearly a genius. And he was the leader of Led Zeppelin, despite what a lot of people will tell you. Number two. Now, for those of us that know heavy metal, and there's a lot of people, like, in all due respect, you know, their version of mid-80s heavy metal was like Bon Jovi and Poison, you know, and that's what we called it, was heavy metal, but it really wasn't. It was very popish. Not to say there's not value in it. I'm not being a music snob here, but it wasn't heavy metal. And what's ironic is the father of heavy metal, Tony Iommi, the patron saint of heavy metal, it's so interesting how these things kind of came to be with he and Ozzy, right? And what people don't understand is that Tommy had an accident that damaged his fingers on his fret hand. And so what he did, because he didn't want to give up playing guitar, is he changed the tuning on his guitar for comfort. Not as a stylistic choice, not as some creative experiment, just because he could play without pain. And all of a sudden, we get the graveyard version of heavy metal. We get, like, the root cause of it all. And ironically, it all became a thing because the guy was just trying to be able to play guitar without pain. It's crazy, man. It is. And that's kind of how life works sometimes. It's like, you know, necessity is the mother of invention and innovation. And so in order to keep playing, he had to make some changes. And ultimately, he spawned a new art form of music. So we're going to go with War Pigs at number two. And you could say, Steve, who could be next? Who could be number one? We've already done Randy Rhoads. We've already done Angus Young. We've already done Jimmy Page. What could we have left? Well, I think it's got to go back to Jimi Hendrix. And what I would say, and I mean this with as much respect as I can possibly muster. And if you find some old interviews with Eddie Van Halen and others, they will kind of point to Hendrix, right? Jimmy was a guy that just kind of changed. Like, he was kind of like the precursor to Tom Morello at a time when guitar playing, for the most part, was very clean. Like, you go back and listen to the Byrds and bands of that nature, kind of that Haight-Ashbury sound. The guitar was just kind of white noise in a track. And then Jimi Hendrix was like, you know, I can do some things with this guitar that other people can't. And so they began to change the cabinets. They began, I mean, for goodness sake, you know, he took a Fender Stratocaster and strung it upside down and played it backwards, for crying out loud, because he couldn't afford a left-handed guitar. Not in the beginning. And so a lot of what people experienced in the 60s with Jimmy was Jimmy's way of trying to express himself in a way that had never been expressed on his instrument of choice. And, you know, like, I love Crosstown Traffic. I love all that stuff. You know, and Jimmy, of course, with one of the Ozzy brothers, did a great version of Day Tripper. It's nuts, man. It's nuts. But we're going to go with Purple Haze at number one. And I say this with as much respect as I can. Link Wray, obviously, we talked about, kind of changed what we saw with distortion to make distortion a big thing. Jimi Hendrix took distortion and made it an art form. And so when you get to Jimi, a lot of what Jimi did, everybody else is kind of sacred fruit from the same tree. So I don't know if there is an Eddie Van Halen as we know him without Jimi Hendrix. Now, was Eddie a more technical player? Absolutely, you better believe it. But I think the way that Jimmy was able to use the distortion and all the things that he did with feedback and things like that in conjunction with the harmonies, to me, makes him the most influential guitar player of all time. That's my feeling. You may disagree. Feel free to let me know. What did these engagement farmers say? Let us know down in the comments, and they don't even read your comments, right? That's what that's about. They give you, you know, they conduct some poll just so they can get your click and your like and your comment. But that's my feeling. And hey, if I've missed somebody, let me know. And a lot of people, like some of my friends back home, would like, dude, you didn't include Mick Mars, and I didn't. I didn't include Mick Mars or Jeff Beck. In that respect, too, Yngwie Malmsteen is a guy, too, that when The Rising Force came out, we were like, we'd never heard anything quite like this. But I think a lot of what Yngwie did, in many respects, was really, in some respects, kind of an homage to Eddie Van Halen, right? So I think Eddie kind of has the shredding part of it handled without us working in Yngwie. And, of course, I got some friends in music that can't stand Yngwie. But nevertheless, there are some people that it's just... Basically, you can hear their soul when they strum a guitar or when they pick a guitar. And to me, these are the top 10 guys. So, Ralph, thanks for the discussion. And it spawned this great top 10 list. I'm going to give you credit for thinking of it. But I do enjoy the music discussions. If you message me about something, it may be a while before I get back to you. But I will get back to you. And I do enjoy talking music with you guys. So if you have an idea for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on X at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. You can find our great list under Spotify under that same handle. And you can find me on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. Be sure and check all that out today. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. We do. And the reason we do is because they have the things we want, right? And at some point, you're going to be buying a gift for somebody that you love. Or maybe you just like them, but you want them to have a great day. Buy Mississippi State merch. We want to rep the Bulldog brand every chance we get. You can find the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the known universe at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see their smiling faces the next time that you're in Starkville, or visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. By being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. And whether it's apparel, decorative items, everything you need to detail out your Mississippi State fan cave, you can find it at Campus Bookmark. Be sure and check it out today. All right. We're still 3 weekends away. And again, it feels like an eternity. But let's check in on, you know, the betting odds, shall we? Kind of see, you know, week one, one of those weeks where it feels like, you know what, everybody should win, but there's a couple of those marquee games early on that are interesting. Labor Day weekend, right? So the first game on the SEC schedule is UTEP at Oklahoma. And I don't know what you guys are expecting here, but the odds makers like Oklahoma by nearly 6 touchdowns. Point spread currently 41.5. And, of course, as we get closer and get our availability reports and things like that, there may be a slight fluctuation. But it should be a blowout in Norman when the Miners show up. On Saturday, the morning game, East Carolina at Alabama. I don't know why, but I think East Carolina might actually cover here. They're not going to win. I just feel like maybe this Kalen DeBoer thing, I think, you know, kind of like we saw last year, they struggled in so many games. They still found a way to win and ultimately made the playoffs. But at no point did you look at that Alabama team, I don't think, and said, you know, this is a dominant program. They're favored by 28.5. Now, I'm not a betting man, but if I was, as we got closer, I might be convinced that, you know, maybe Alabama wins by 20. Maybe. They're going to out-athlete them. But you wonder a little bit, maybe if Alabama doesn't take their foot off the gas late and East Carolina puts a garbage touchdown up. Another one of these games, this is kind of a throwaway. The Golden Flashes of Kent State, the proud alma mater of Lou Holtz and Nick Saban, will travel to Columbia, South Carolina. Vegas likes the Gamecocks at 36.5. I don't know if the Golden Flashes have much to contend with this year. But, you know, South Carolina's got some dudes. Not a lot. Remember, Lenora Sellers was QB1, all-SEC preseason last year. I don't know how many votes he got this year, but he didn't get it. All right, Texas State. That'll be the 230, one of the 230 games. Texas State at Texas. I suspect nobody outside of the state of Texas will watch this game. And Texas favored by 30.5. I just don't think Texas State, the boys from San Marcos, can stop Texas. But I won't be surprised if Texas State puts a few points up. Could be interesting. All right, one of the toss-up games going to be played in Atlanta. Baylor at Auburn. You know, we had Baylor in one of these games earlier this year, or last year, you know, against Auburn. And Hugh Freeze and those guys go in there and win the game. It wasn't pretty, but they found a way to get it done without a lot of anxiety late. Tigers are favored by 7 in this game. 7. It could be interesting. I just, you know, it's first game for Alex Golish. It's, you know, what is it, year 4 for Aranda? Maybe even longer than that. But it just feels like that, you know, Baylor probably has a little more stability, and maybe that matters. But Auburn should have better athletes, even though they lost some skill position guys. But that could be an interesting game. Missouri State, if this was a baseball game, I might give the Bears a fighting chance here, but Missouri State's at Texas A&M, and the Aggies are favored by 39.5. I think it's pretty safe to say Texas A&M should win that. I mean, defensively, you know what to expect from the Aggies under Elko. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how vanilla they are offensively. They'll win this game going away. But, you know, they lose Concepcion, right? They still got Mario Craver. But it's just an interesting dynamic. Again, week one, new toys, we'll see. Clemson at LSU, another one of these made-for-TV games. That'll be a Saturday night game going on the same time that we're playing. They got LSU favored by 9.5. Now, you remember when LSU won that game, they went and danced on Clemson's field. You know, and you know, Dabo and those guys struggled last year to get bowl eligible. And again, a lot of people thought much higher of them earlier in the year. And when LSU beat Clemson, it felt like such a big deal. It turned out that it wasn't a good deal. Neither one of them were very good last year. They got the LSU Tigers favored by 9.5 at home. In a night game, you got to like the Tigers there. And I'm not saying that to be cute. I'm talking LSU, the Bayou Bengals. Of course, Louisiana Monroe is here with us. Current line's 28.5. And, you know, Armenta's a good quarterback at Louisiana Monroe. And everybody's like, well, they got all these transfers, and it's been year three for them, too. Guys, there's just a different brand of athlete choosing Mississippi State than Louisiana Monroe. And of course, Ahmad Hardy went to Louisiana Monroe as a freshman, one of the best running backs in the country, went to Missouri. Now he's, you know, a guy that's expected to have a pretty big payday next spring. There's no Ahmad Hardy coming out of that tunnel. For the Warhawks, I like State to win this game and cover. Florida Atlantic's at Florida, and it's 26.5. And listen, the Owls, you know, let's just kind of be honest. You know, is FAU ever going to have a team that would match up with Florida? I'd say probably no. And John Summerall, veteran coach, took Tulane to the playoffs last year. A lot of people don't like John Summerall. I do, you know, and he was a finalist for our job when we hired Jeff Lebby. It's just funny how life works out. All right, we get into Sunday, and Louisville and Ole Miss are going to play a game here. And the Rebels currently favored by 6.5. Now, from a talent standpoint, I think Ole Miss is clearly the more talented team. But, you know, what does that mean kind of moving forward? I don't know. I think Trinidad Chambliss is probably good enough to win this game, provided they can protect him a little bit. And I know Ole Miss lost some pieces on defense, and so that'll be interesting. I just don't think Louisville's got the firepower. I'm surprised the spread is not higher. I think Ole Miss is a much better team. The Louisville, that's my feeling. Maybe you see it a little bit differently. We'll see how it kind of plays out. But, that's just some of the things that Vegas is talking about right now. And I'm looking to be sure I didn't overlook a game here. Just to be sure, right? Looking around the country, there's a lot of games that are going to be these games that are just kind of tune-up games for people and paycheck games for others. I think we all probably see it the same way. But I love these Power Five mandate games that we get to watch. That's my feeling. Especially, I just want to go win a game, right? I think that's kind of how you guys feel too. But, who knows? Who knows how these things go? I do know that we need Mississippi State to finish 1-0. I can assure you of that. And then, outside of that, whatever is whatever. But a lot of people ask, Steve, do you think this is a year where we're going to have a lot of 8-4, 9-3 type teams? And I would tend to agree with that. I think that's probably fair. When you look at over under, there's not a lot of teams that are projected to have double digit wins, we'll see how that goes. But I think the league is going to beat each other up this year, my feelings. Looking at the Heisman odds, it's interesting how this kind of all plays out too. We've got some SEC guys in contention, as you'd expect. And it's just kind of part of the deal, We should always have some SEC guys. But the odds-on favorite right now, according to most sports books, is C.J. Carr, quarterback from Notre Dame. Then behind him is Arch Manning. And that's one of the things you ask yourself. With the other pieces around him, like how much will they have to commit him to the running game? And, does that give him an opportunity, of course, to kind of, pad the stats a little bit? Then there's Oregon quarterback Dante Moore. Carr and Manning are kind of like a coin flip, depending on which book you look at. And then there's Moore. We'll see what happens with him at Oregon. Obviously, Dan Lanning's kind of got things going his way there. And again, I go back, I don't even remember who broke the story. But there was somebody in the industry that came out and said that Lanning was getting a job. And then everybody in the national college sports media is like, this guy's crazy. He never even responded. He just let his work speak for himself, and he was ultimately proved to be correct. Julian Sain from Ohio State is number 5. And then you got Darian Mensah, former Duke quarterback that went to Miami. Then there's Trinidad Chambliss that, he's like plus 1,200. So he's behind some guys, but obviously, he's going to be in a situation to do some good things. They got Sam Levitt and Gunnar Stockton and Mateer all in here too. Again, it should be a year for good quarterbacks. And it's interesting, when you think about, Jeff Lebby. Jeff Lebby's been around some highs and winners too. When he was a student assistant at Oklahoma, what's his name? John White won the Heisman Trophy. I think that's right. Let me look to be sure here. I'm looking. Jason White. And so Leb was around that. And, of course, Leb was on staff when Robert Griffin III won at Baylor. And I think most of us were cheering for that, right? It was like we wanted it to be a situation where there's new blood, right? And it's not the same old, same old. And that's the truth. And so, you may not agree with everything Robert Griffin III says on X, but there's no doubting the guy was an outstanding football player. And he was. And when I think about the fact that Robert Griffin could win the Heisman Trophy at Baylor, it kind of gives you hope it could happen a lot of places. And then you look for more direct supervision. It's Mackenzie Milton from Central Florida. And a lot of people thought, hey, he was going to have an opportunity to, and he got some votes for the Heisman, but they had an undefeated season. He was a Heisman candidate twice, 17 and 18. Finished 8th in 17 and 6th in 18. So it's one of those things where you begin to kind of think, in the event that Camario has the career that we hope, then, Jeff Lebby, I don't know how to help him manage those expectations. And you remember, it was such a devastating thing when Milton got nuked in that game against South Florida. And there was a lot of people then that thought he was absolutely the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, going in his last couple of weeks. So I just kind of share that just because of the fact that, Jeff Lebby has been around great quarterbacks. And let's be honest, the job he did with Matt Corral at Ole Miss. Matt Corral, if they had not made the move following the 19 season and fired Matt Luke, Matt Corral is probably in the transfer portal and probably goes out and has a big year for somebody on the West Coast. Them making the coaching change and bringing in Lane Kiffin resurrected Matt Corral's career. There's no other way to look at it, right? And Jeff Lebby was a part of that too. Now, Matt obviously, was not a Heisman finalist, but the guy had a great year. And so when I think about Leb's ability to manage quarterbacks and to have been around great quarterbacks, I think he will handle this whole situation with Camario Taylor with excellence. I think he has said, hey, I've been around some great quarterbacks. You have some of the same attributes. If you do this, then here's where we can take you. Here's where this offense can lead you. And if you don't believe me, go back and look at some of those RG3 highlights in Baylor that Heisman year. It was ridiculous, man. It was absolutely ridiculous. And Camario has kind of that same, that je ne sais quoi, that people around him kind of elevate their game because they don't want to disappoint him. And you hear some of that commentary. And so, no, I don't think Camario Taylor is a Heisman finalist this year. I don't think he's a candidate this year. But I think he's one of those guys that could probably go out and work his way into it. And maybe next year you look at it and say, you know what, that Camario Taylor kid from Mississippi State's got some real ability. But we got to win enough games to make that a possibility. And we've got a great nucleus of players. We brought in some other guys that we're meshing with. But everybody will tell you how great it is playing with Camario. And I will be honest with you. I don't know, even when Dak was coming up, everybody loved Dak. And Dak was kind of package quarterback, kind of the same way that we used Camario last year. But I don't know that there was that same magnetism early in Dak's career that there is with Camario. And maybe it's because we need Camario to be great. We had Tyler Russell. We were excited about Tyler. And so we figured Dak would have his time. It came sooner than we expected. But Dak had that, it quality. But I think Camario, based on where he is in his career, granted, he's had two starts. I think Camario's got Dak beat when it comes to that attribute. As far as like having the true respect of his teammates, and I'm in no way diminishing Dak. We know what Dak has done. But I think Camario has shown up maybe in a position where his leadership is maybe a little more valued. And I think maybe that's because of the fact, too, that we have struggled at quarterback for a few years. We had the stupid offensive change in 23, and Will got hurt. And we had Mike Wright out there running around doing the best he could. And then, of course, Blake gets hurt, and we have to go out there. Michael Van Buren, Chris Parson played a little bit. I still don't know that Chris got a fair shake. But anyway, I think you look at Kamara and you think, dude, if we could just keep a quarterback healthy, a guy that has his kind of ability, and his ability to put the ball in the end zone, they really think great things could happen. But Camario comes along at the perfect time for this Mississippi State fan base. We need a star to cheer for. We need a leader for the entire program to rally behind, and I believe we have that in Camario. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. Make some memories with the people you love the most. It's so nice to have everybody under one roof together. Mom can get up and make those legendary cinnamon rolls in the morning for breakfast. You get that cold glass of milk, and she'll even pour it for you. She's eager to do it, just so you guys know. You know, that's the thing about being mom. Most moms are acts of service people. It's why they become moms in the first place. They need somebody to take care of. Let mom take care of you just for a weekend. You know, I don't want you to be a freeloader, but give her the joy of taking care of you. And dad kind of feels that way too. He'd love to be able to take you out to eat and that sort of stuff. But man, wouldn't it just be great just to give mom and dad the chance to have all the grandkids and all the kids under one roof? We've done that. Yeah. So Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can peruse pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking, 6 bedrooms, 2, soon to be 3 baths. It can accommodate everything you need. Really quiet out there, too. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Now, when you do that Google search, you're also going to have some booking options. You can go through Airbnb or Vrbo if you want, but if you want to save a few bucks, and I can help you with that, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, and get 10% off your stay. Be sure and check it out today. All right, a couple things before we get out of here. Like the Louisiana Monroe thing, we're like 2 weeks away from game week. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, it's 3 weeks until we play a game. But yeah, it's once you get into game week, it's like you have your Monday presser, and then there's player availability. We get the post of the opponent's press conference. We get all that stuff transcribed. And next thing you know, it's a high school game on Friday. You know, so like the week goes by. Once we get into football season, it really, really runs quickly. It just does. Like right now, it feels like it's the dog days of summer. Even though some kids are already back in school, like it really feels like things are dragging. But taking a look at Louisiana Monroe, a lot of people have them picked dead last in their division in the Sun Belt. In the Western Division, they got the fewest number of points. They're 19th. And then there's South Alabama. Southern Miss is 5th. Somebody even picked Southern Miss to win the league. Anybody can make a list. Louisiana Tech is 4th, Arkansas State 3rd, UL Lafayette is 2nd, but the runaway favorite is Troy. And what's interesting, too, is like going kind of looking, kind of giving you kind of a general overview. We get a little bit closer. You know, we know that Aiden Armenta is a good quarterback. He's the guy that followed Coach Vincent from New Mexico to Louisiana Monroe, and he's got 2 years of starting under his belt. And again, he's not the most athletic guy, but he's a very smart guy, gets rid of the football quickly. They did bring in Don Chaney Jr. as a transfer that, we'll see how that kind of plays out with them. But they got like 40, 45 new players, and so a lot of moving pieces. It's tough to go on the road, right? It's one of those things you look at. While they brought some people back on defense, you and I both know we're not fishing in the same pond for players. We ought to be able to out-athlete them, and I do think we cover that game. But I think there is some optimism because the schedule's a little more favorable. It's got the one Power Four opponent, which is us, and they have 6 home games. But this is a team last year that really struggled. Really struggled. And so, we're going to be nervous anyway just because we're ready to win. But we should be able to take care of them. And, again, we'll get more on them as we get a little bit closer. But it's like I start thinking about that aspect of it. Man, it's 3 weeks away till we play, but it's 2 weeks until it's game week. And things really, 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 really begin to run in the right direction after that. Couple things I want to talk to you about, too. It's been a crazy week in Starkville as you have been dropping off your kids at college. And there's a few things I want to say about that. I had to run to Walmart to pick up a couple things, and I pulled in, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be a disaster. Got a parking spot right up front. walked in, filled my scripts at the pharmacy, one person ahead of me in line. But while I'm waiting, I see a lot of dads. A lot of dads walking around pushing a shopping cart. A lot of curtain rods, a lot of shower curtains, a lot of dishes. And I don't know if these dads are just kind of adding up the expense in their heads. I don't know. But here's what I can tell you. For you young people that are heading off to college for the first time. Like once they leave, like you are so jacked. It's not because they're gone. It's because you're gone, right? And it's the new phase of life. So a few things I'm going to tell you for you young bucks and buckettes. Your parents aren't going to be doing well. Now, they'll adjust, but in the early weeks of your time there, a phone call from you will mean everything. Now, there's a good chance mom's going to text you every day because that's what moms do, right? Hey, just want to make sure you got this taken care of, everything going okay, how'd you sleep last night? There's a lot of that. That didn't go away. That didn't go away forever. But when you go off to college, it's kind of amplified because mom's not there to kind of see about you. And yes, many of you kind of learned some independence in high school and some self-reliance. Like my children, and I kind of raised them to be this way, you know, they were responsible for setting their own alarms, and it was a rare thing that I ever had to get up and wake anybody up. And so you learn some independence, right? And you start going to kids' activities and church functions and school functions, and you have some independence. So you've kind of grown accustomed to kind of being on your own. But it's different when you go to college. It's a different friend group. You'll have some friends here, but it's not that same group that you went to high school with, the same people that you grew up with in the church youth group. It's a different group. And not everybody is raised the same way you have been raised. It's important to understand. That's one of the things that Mia, my youngest daughter, she was a presidential scholar at Mississippi State. And a week into that thing, she said, I am so glad that my parents gave me some freedom so I didn't lose my mind when I first got to college. Because here's the thing that you don't know. There is somebody going out every night. Now, you can't go out every night, not and maintain a good academic standing. And so you're going to have to kind of pick and choose. And you're trying to make new friends, right? And you're like, hey, I want to go with this group, whatever. And you know, it's one, if you want to go out for a little while and come home, that's fine. But you're here for your education. You're here to be socialized, right? You're here to spread your wings a little bit. But the most important thing is you got to go to class. Dr. Keenum's going to tell you the same thing. You got to go to class. And then on graduation day, he's going to remind you that he told you, go to class. And the fact that you're sitting there in a commencement ceremony would suggest you went to class. This is not just a chance to get away from home and party. You're going to get a chance to do that stuff too. But at the end of the day, focus on what matters most. You and your parents have made a commitment for you to be here, whether it's at Mississippi State or anywhere else. It's not inexpensive to go to college. It's not. And for many of you, you got some scholarships, but as you saw from that trip to Walmart, mom and dad still having to fork out a lot of stuff to ensure that you get off to a great start, that you have the things you need. Many of them are also going to be paying a portion of your tuition, if not all of your tuition. So their sacrifice on your behalf has to be respected. They don't have to do it. You may think they do, but they don't have to do it. And there are a lot of families that are having to do this by committee for you. Don't ever forget that. Every dollar spent towards your apartment, towards your vehicle, your parking pass, your books, comes from somewhere. And more times than not, it comes from somebody who loves you and believes in your future. Don't ever develop this sense of entitlement that you feel like, hey, well, I deserve this. Because they don't have to do it. And that's important to understand. They want to do it. And for many of them, the want sometimes exceeds their ability to do it. You know, dad may start bringing his lunch to work just so things will be a little bit easier. Now, granted, you know, the light bill at the house will probably go down a little bit without you being around and leaving the lights on and, you know, having people over and staying up all hours of the night and things of that nature, you know. But it's not going to be enough to compensate for the expense that's required for you to go to school. So I ask that you check in with your parents from time to time. Let them know you're doing okay. Because if they haven't heard from you, they're going to be sitting around watching Netflix or whatever. Hey, did you hear from so-and-so today? No, we ought to text them. I don't want to bother them. That they're going to have that debate every night. So if you just out of the blue, hey, just want to text you guys and thank you. Thank you for making this happen for me. I won't let you down. You know, one of the most important lessons that I've ever learned in life, it was about making amends, because I was a problem child, and there were so many nights my mom had to wait up and wonder if she was going to get a phone call. And then eventually, after I got clean and sober, I asked an old timer in recovery, "How do I make that right?" And he goes, "Well, whenever you get home for the night, you just call your mom and let her know you're home for the night." And in the beginning, she thought that I was up to something. And eventually, it kind of reopened the door for our relationship. And then she looked forward to those calls, you know. It's like, "Hey, Mom, I got back from an AA meeting, and we went and had pizza. I'm home for tonight. I just didn't want you to worry, you know. Your parents are going to worry. They're going to worry. And you need to understand that." On the other side of this, parents, you got to cut the apron strings, okay? When we dropped Ani off at college, the first time, when he went to play baseball, everybody cried when they got in the van to go home. Everybody except for me. I didn't. And it's not that I wasn't emotional, but I was just so happy and excited for him because he was getting the opportunity to play college baseball. And I knew the opportunity that he had. And I also understood, too, that my son was watching me. He was watching me to see how to act. Now, Mama's crying. His mama's not going to be there to make sure you got clean laundry next week. You know, your younger siblings were crying because all of a sudden, the oldest child has left the nest. And while they picked at each other for years and years and years, they loved each other. And they still do. But it was very emotional pulling away with everybody in the van crying other than me. And when I got down the highway and nobody was paying attention, I teared up a little bit too, because I love my son. And I didn't worry about him. I was more worried about the baseball side than the academic side and kind of living on his own, right? I just wanted him to have a great experience. But I didn't overrun him every day. I wanted to call him. And the first few days, I'd send him a text message, "Hey, give me a call after practice. I want to know how things went." And that was kind of the crux of our conversation, because I also kind of wanted to remind him too, you know, how's class going? What's school like? You know, remind them of the things that matter. When I missed him, it was tough, but I reminded myself that every backyard game and every batting cage session was to reach this point. And you have to let them go. You have to let them go. And at times you got to let them make some mistakes. Every one of my four children, and they would be embarrassed if I told you this, and I don't care, I'm being your friend here. Every one of my four children had some minor brush with the law when they went off to college. Every one of them. They all did. And typically it was, I guess we had one minor in possession charge. I guess we had that. We had a couple speeding tickets, and we had a, no tag. You know, somebody, we didn't get the renewal notice in the mail, and he didn't think to check because he's a kid, right? He's still learning adult responsibilities. So if it happens, it's not the end of the world, okay? But when you're already in an amplified state of emotion, you're already worried to death about your kid, and then all of a sudden you find, oh, they got a speeding ticket, or they're not paying attention, and they're not focused. That's part of the journey. Now, you got to take corrective action, of course, but don't freak out. because it's going to happen. You know, again, all four of them, right? And so now, right, my oldest is the leading business-to-business sales rep at Walmart Corporate. I got a computer engineer, and I got a Harvard Law student. And then, of course, I've got a young man that'll graduate next year. I was hoping it'd be in May, but it's in December of next year. And but everybody survived it, right? So you're going to have some issues. And along the way, too, a couple of my kids had some roommate issues. They just found out they weren't compatible. And that's okay, too. You know, doesn't mean we got to be jerks to each other, but, you know, we had to change rooms. You know, we had to move some things around. Because we had some kids that operated on different schedules. You know, we have a lot of kids, of course, that are trying to maintain some long-distance relationship. And I'm not going to tell you what's important to you. But there was one situation, one of my kids' roommates, like, you know, because there were time zones and scheduling, you know, they'd be up till 2 in the morning sometimes on FaceTime with each other or talking on Discord or whatever that gaming server is. I'm in from 1900. We didn't do that, right? But you adjust. You learn to overcome it. And so, again, parents, when these little mundane problems come along, and that's what they are, let's not make them a bigger deal than they have to be. Again, you address them, but don't act like that, you know, the world's coming to an end, because it's not. And for you students, a little Starkville info here. The one thing we don't want to do when we're leaving campus and we're headed to the big Walmart, you know, I address this every year, but when we're headed to the big Walmart, you can use the left lane to navigate down 12, and then you can start getting over into the right lane as you approach Walmart. We don't want you stacking up the right-hand lane from campus on 12 all the way to Walmart. In fact, if you're going to the big Walmart, take Highway 82. It's going to save you gas. It's going to save you time. And you're going to get there quicker. So jump out on 82, backside of campus, go around to the big Walmart. However, if you just need a few things, chances are they're going to be at the Walmart neighborhood market, just off campus, just within a stone's throw of campus. So rather than going and fighting down 12 and causing gridlock on 12, just run to the neighborhood market. If you just need to go pick up some hot dogs and drinks, that's where you go. You don't need to go to the big Walmart. I know in many of your small towns, Walmart is the epicenter of all cultural activity. And so you're just used to going to the big Walmart because you never know who you may run into. Chances are that's not going to be the case here. So be mindful of that. And then don't go get a dog. Don't do it. That's the one that everybody, because here's what happens. We have a great group of volunteers and staff at the Oktibbeha County Humane Society. They do an amazing job. But is towards the end of the fall semester every year, they get overrun with drop-offs and surrenders because some student decides, hey, I want to get a dog. And you know what? That's a noble thing. But you are not in a position where you can give that dog a lot of quality of life. You're going to be gone a lot. And that dog is going to be sitting around waiting on you. You got class. You're going to have to try to have a social life. You're going to try to get out and enjoy ball games and fraternity parties and sorority parties and things like that. And a dog is going to be sitting around waiting on you. You're just not at a point right now in your life where you can give a dog a great life. That day will come, but this is not it. So please don't run out and get a dog. I'm saying that on behalf of everybody, for humanity and animal kind alike. And also, we just don't want a bunch of drop-offs at the shelter. You know, a lot of people just go drop the dog off in the middle of the night. Oh, it's good enough. They'll find him. And then those dogs wander out in the street. It's a busy highway out there. So please don't put that dog in jeopardy until you settle in and maybe have a place where let the dog can be outside and have some shade and have access to water and things like that in a fenced-in environment. then and only then do you really go get a dog. But you got your first apartment, you think, man, nothing would be better than to have a dog to come home to. And you know what? I love my dogs. But I'm also here about 18 hours a day. And so I'm here that I can take care of them, right? So when somebody walks up and gives me a nuzzle in the elbow, I can get up, take them outside, and use the restroom. The last thing you want to do is, after a long day at class, is have to come home and clean up after a dog, because you will begin to resent the dog. And that in turn, it's like, man, I just want a little break. You know, well, you know, this is what you signed up for. So until that you can be a responsible dog owner, and I know how well-intended you may be, but you have no idea how busy you're going to be. You just don't. You don't know. And then some of you, you know, you'll go get a dog, and then you drop him off at your parents' place. You know, it's like, hey, I can't take care of him right now. Let me tell you right now, you can't take care of him. And while it's touching to think that, you know, you give mom a new dog to look after, really, when you give somebody a dog unsolicited, you're kind of giving them a bill and a responsibility that was supposed to be yours. And so, incredibly important to understand that aspect of it. And the final thing that I'm going to say before we get ready to close, and this goes out to all of my young kings out there, we have a responsibility to the fair sex. All of us. And one of the things that we don't do as true kings is we don't take advantage of a girl who's had a little too much to drink. In fact, when we see a girl that may be a friend that's had a little too much to drink, we offer to get her home. We offer to bring her home, or we get her an Uber, or we get her with some other friends and allow them to bring her home. We don't take advantage of that situation. And listen, I was a college guy once too. I was also in music, right? And so I understand how guys think when you're that age. And all of a sudden, you know, she seems to be getting buzzed, and you think, hey, man, maybe I'll get lucky tonight. When she wakes up in the morning and all of a sudden you become the biggest regret of her young life, that's not a position you want to be in. Because it may be a scenario where she had more to drink than you realize, and maybe she didn't have the ability to consent. And the next thing you know, everybody gets together and starts comparing notes, and they're like, hey, I think she was assaulted. Next thing you know, there's a police detective knocking on your door. And you know what? And for good reason. So use good judgment. And I know when you're 19... that's difficult to do because your brain isn't done forming. But it is important to understand, when we go to bars and we have female attendees, and maybe they're sitting at our table or maybe they're not, and all of a sudden somebody didn't cover a drink, and you see somebody walk over there, you have a responsibility as a gentleman to let her know that somebody messed with her drink, or you need to alert security if somebody messed with her drink. We're not gonna get down that way, guys. That's not what we're gonna do. And again, you get a lot of people up here, everybody all full of raging hormones and alcohol, and next thing you know, something bad happens. Protect yourself, protect your name, protect your brand. And don't be in a situation that you may make a mistake, or you may have an error in judgment, or at the end of the day, maybe you make a decision to commit a crime and think nobody's going to know. That'll stay with you the rest of your life. That will be stapled to every resume that you ever send out. Ever. Ever. I have 4 sisters. I have 2 daughters. I have a wife that I absolutely adore. And this is one of those little speeches that we have from time to time. And when I go and speak to fraternity houses and things like that at Mississippi State and other places, this is one of the points that I emphasize. We've got a responsibility to help protect the women around us, the women in our lives. We have responsibility to them, even if they don't ask for it. We have a responsibility to ensure that nobody victimizes them. It's important to understand. you haven't done so, visit DirtyNobleBook.com. You can get signed copies of all my sports titles. It's Flim Flam, Alpha Dog, Stark Villains, The Dude, and Dog Pile. Every Bulldog fan needs a copy of those. And then the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. And come float with us at True Rest Floats, Bob Starville, 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my beautiful wife, Dana. She can answer any questions you have about floating. And for some of you parents, after all this moving, you probably need to float, right? And come join us over at jeanspage.com. You get an annual subscription at 60% off the usual rate. Take you all the way to next summer. Be sure and check it out today. The most comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State sports and the history of the university at a discounted price. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.